the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another installment of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. We have the entomology team in the room today. We got Don Cook, Whitney Crow, and Angus sitting on the couch with me. We are 6 feet apart, so we put Jeff out to pasture so Whitney could give her 2 cents today. Angus, what do you want to talk to Whitney about?
Well, I don't necessarily want to talk to Whitney. I talk to her all the time, but I want to talk, I guess,
you don't in public,
to the growers that might be listening to this. No, I'm going to call her out. I'm going to make her speak up today. We're going to get her because she knows way more than I know anyway.
Is that because you quit learning sometime in the mid-2000s?
No, that's because she was a grad student in RA for me for several years. I taught her everything I know, and then I forgot what I knew.
That sounds like a plan. I think that even got a chuckle out of Dr. Don over there. What's wrong, Don?
I feel like a wet dog.
Well, you look like a wet dog, too.
Hey, I probably sorry. Smell like a wet dog, too.
All right, guys, so we're about to get finished raining for the week.
Maybe.
And we got a lot of cotton about first bloom out there. What are we going to do?
Well, I don't know your rules about talking about dates when you do a podcast, but I know today is a Friday, and this thing probably will not air until next week. So we're going to probably need to talk about it in the context of when people are going to be listening, I think, to this. But figure we could hit some stuff on cotton.
Yeah, I normally don't do dates. You're the only one bringing up dates.
Well, and I think it's important.
I said, how are you going to spray first bloom cotton?
Well,
and you said, well, it's Friday.
All of that ties in because we're looking and trying to make a prediction into the future when folks are actually going to listen to this.
Well, and we're trying to couch it in terms of probably when these bollworm moths are going to start emerging.
That's exactly
right. Well, the problem is you dang entomologists got to have everything just perfect.
Well, we're perfectionists.
Yes. Sometimes, live in my world where we deal with p-values of 0.02.
All right. Sometimes our windows are pretty narrow that we can work in.
I'm just glad right. I don't have to chase what I'm trying to kill around. It's sitting there in front of me.
Yeah, it's nice when it doesn't get up and move on you.
Well, so look, this is the thing. So we're looking at right now, today is...
No dates.
Well, no. This is very important to the context of what we're going to be talking about. Today is July 10th. Our bollworm flight that comes out of corn, typically every 4th of July when I'm sitting on the riverbank trying to catfish, I'm getting texts and calls about, hey, picking up some eggs, and it's usually in the south part of the state. It's not bad, but it usually the first few calls are around the 3rd or 4th of July, and they start trickling in until about the 10th or the 15th when they're really getting more widespread. So I keep saying the date because here we are sitting on July 10th. As of today, I have not had a single call.
I know why.
Why?
Because we planted everything a month later than we normally do, Angus.
Well, so everything is driven. You're right. This flight is 100% driven by corn. There's no question about it. And I've been in a lot of corn, and Don's been in it, Whitney, Jeff, all of us. And correct me if I'm wrong, Don, but the very first of April planted stuff appeared to be that they were coming out or fifth instars mid-week last week.
Yeah.
Which, that week of the 4th.
Yeah.
So once they leave that ear, you got 7 to 9, 10 days in the ground, and they start coming out. It looks like we're still going to hit this 15th mark. But my whole point of these dates was I really expect that mid to late next week, we're going to start really getting, some bollworm calls again.
And the other deal is we did have some corn all in the Rolling Fork area that got in, late March, some of it maybe mid-March. There was a little window down there that they got some in. Most of what I looked at down there had almost no bollworm infestation in it.
Whitney.
What?
Told you I'm going to call on you. You been in any of this corn lately, looking, doing ear counts or whatever?
Yeah, I've done a little bit with Jeff and Don.
What kind of infestations have you been seeing? I mean, percent. I mean, like, if you got non-BT corn, is it like 20% or are they full?
I haven't thought about the percentages.
Well, the reason I'm asking is most of the non-BT I've been in
it's been relatively high.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say for mine as well.
We checked one this morning. This reason I'm soaking wet, it's a little bit later, mid-April planted. Non-BT is 100% infestation. Every year's got 1 to 4. So
on the mid-April planting.
Yes. In the early April stuff.
Hold on, Don. You said is 100% infested 1 to 4. That's a big range for 100%. Where's the...
He's not counting the 4 in one ear where it could be 400%.
Every ear has at least one.
There you go.
Many more than one.
Yeah.
The first April, which is a first, week to 10 days April, which is most of the corn from Highway 82 south, maybe a little above. You get north here, it's later than that. That's got a pretty good infestation. The earlier stuff, like I mentioned, kind of missed it, but that's only pockets of that corn. A lot of it is, that first of April, first week of April is the planting date. And it tends to have a pretty good bit of worms in it, or have had it.
So yeah. Depending on how much non-BT corn, or even double pro, my double pro, actually my double pro is not 100% infested this year. It actually appeared that it worked better. It's only like 70% infested.
And I don't know if you're seeing it, but I'm seeing it in mine. I'm seeing a delay, still seeing the delay in development between it and non-BT that we've seen for years. I fully expect to have a lot of them survive, but they're just slower developing like they've been in the last number of years.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, actually this year, because that one trial that we're all doing where we're actually writing the instars down, that probably made it more apparent to me that there was that delay in the
I'm not program. Doing that trial.
Yeah, be glad you're not.
Well, you said we're all, and I'm sitting in the room.
Well, I just meant all the important people.
I think it's just not that bad.
If I hit end on this keyboard, then you're not important anymore.
The entomology thing.
It's not that bad, I guess.
No, it's not that bad. But I got somebody on every crew every year that's allergic to corn pollen. I thought I was going to get away with it this year, but I had one break out the next day really bad. But I got 1 out of 10 this year that can't get into corn with me.
Well, let me tell you what. If he can't get into corn, don't let him get anywhere near Milo.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Well, we're going to find that out in about 10 days. But the corn broke him out.
Well, then the it will too.
All right, back on track.
So that's kind of like
you're probably violating some HIPAA rules right now.
Well, I didn't say a name. I just said I got one in every group. But I don't know. I'm fixing to really get off track here. But it reminds me of this a lot. So if somebody's allergic to bees or whatever.
Yeah.
Generally, I hope I'm right if saying this on air. But generally, they're not cross allergic to a wasp.
He was about to say cross resistant.
Cross resistant.
But grain sorghum is worse. So people who generally aren't allergic to corn sometimes can still be bothered in grain sorghum.
If you react to corn, Milo is going to be worse.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not allergic to anything but poison ivy. I'm good.
You better be thankful.
Well, I am allergic to poison ivy, though. I'm not thankful about that. So, look, back to this bollworm flight that is likely going to get underway and well underway in the next probably 7 to 10 days. Probably the most important thing that I think we could say here today, and I'll see if y'all agree with me, but I'm a super firm believer in this, so if you disagree with me, I'm going to look stupid. When we're timing these diamide shots, and we say
is it a shot or application?
Well, it depends. It's an application, I guess you would say.
Does it go through a hypodermic needle?
Depends on who you're talking to.
Bobby, I like to talk the language of the people that we deal with. That's why I don't use Latin names when I'm talking about bugs, because they don't know what they are, so it would be crazy. What I was going to say is you are so much better off being early than late. Keep that in mind when this egg lay starts. An early diamide shot works so much better than if you're chasing worms that have already hatched. It's probably the most important thing we can say today.
And if they get inside bloom tags, and the flowers close, manage your expectations. I mean, do not expect 70-80% control. You're not going to get it. 40% is going to be a bunch.
Be mindful that that application is referring to 2-gene cotton.
Whitney, breaking out to science.
Well, that's an important point. So we need to bring that up right now because we do have, we are talking about Bogard 2 or Wide Strike or, you know, or whatever.
Twinling.
So what is our deal? So we do have a lot more Bogard 3 and Wide Strike 3 out there, and we do have a different recommendation on that.
So we're recommending that you follow the egg threshold, so 20% egg lay for a Prevathon application. If you're dealing with a 3-gene cotton, so talking about Wide Strike 3, Bogard 3, refer to the damage. So look at larval infestation or percent damage to trigger your applications.
Yeah, instead of eggs, right?
Yes, so, yeah. Instead of eggs.
Yeah. And I guess our early indications, we talked about corn earlier, you know, we've been asked a lot about resistance or potential resistance in the VIP technology cotton and how we're going to know it's there or whatever. And I think the way we're going to figure that out is we're going to see it in corn first. And so far this year, I have found some worms, but it's real low percentages. So I haven't seen anything, at least so far.
Can I ask a question before you go any further?
Sure.
You said you've seen some worms, and then you're talking about resistance. What denotes resistance? I mean, how big does the worm got to get for it to be resistant?
Well, there's a lot of things before you can actually say it's resistant. But I can tell you this. If we got VIP corn out there and we start seeing high infestations of surviving larvae, from a management standpoint, we're going to assume that we will likely see problems in 3-gene or VIP cotton, and we will probably base recommendations on that and let other people determine whether it's truly resistant after the fact, because I don't want to cost anybody a bunch of money. You know, we're going to do what, based on that, what we think's right as far as the recommendations.
Well, part of it is not just survival. It's, you know, yes, they can survive for many days as tiny little larvae that's inconsequential. They need to be able to feed and grow and cause damage. I mean, if you have corn, and we're talking about corn here, if you have plants that are positive for the VIP trait because, you know, there's a certain percentage, depending on what technology it is, may not be expressing, that if you have big larvae that have clearly developed.
Don, how do you know if they're positive?
There's some test kits that we have access to.
Well, what I'm saying is, if I'm a farmer in the middle of Mississippi, how do I know that this is VIP positive or not?
Well, I mean, here's the issue. If it's a significant amount, call us. We'll come make a collection. We'll pull some tissues. We'll test it. I mean, that's really.
What do you consider significant, Whitney?
Significant in terms of number?
Yeah. Survivors.
I would
that we
say,
might see.
Yeah, a couple hundred.
Yeah. Per
area.
How big's the area?
Well,
I mean, I'm just trying to put a handle on this.
Something where you're easily finding worms.
It's not a defined deal. If you can go out, one person can go out and easily find 40, 50 decent size worms in, say, 30 minutes or so, I think you have some significant event occurring. I mean, unless y'all have a different kind of criteria. I mean, it's very subjective right now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a couple hundred, like Whitney was talking about. She's talking about what we would need to collect to run the resistant assay. That's what we would need to be able to collect out of a grower's field for us to do this. Not something that would get our attention. What would get our attention, if you start finding somewhere around 10% or so survival in VIP corn, that would absolutely get my attention. 5% would get my attention. 10% would really get it, because we haven't seen that before very often.
You talking about that? 5% in that, they're all big?
Mm-hmm.
That'd get my attention quickly.
In the corn crop, not the cotton crop.
In the corn crop, yes.
Well, I mean, either one.
Well, you got to start somewhere, right?
So. You like he said, Angus said, you're going to see it in the corn first.
So given the fact that all the years, and it's been a lot of years that we have tested VIP corn, until the last year or two, we have seen practically zero survivors. So if we, in the last couple of years, we've seen some 2-3% surviving. It's got our attention. We're not super worried about it, but this is why we're monitoring corn for the sake of cotton. If we jump out in a year and we start seeing 10-15% survival, it is an indication to us that we think something is changing.
So the whole thing is, you're not worried about corn. You 2-3% isn't bothering you at all. This is all for that flight out of corn into cotton, and then we got real trouble.
There you go. That's right.
That was a long way around to get to that statement.
Well, it really kind of was, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, like, way around.
Hey, speaking of movement from corn to cotton, last year, a lot of, you know, we talk about triggering on egg thresholds. A lot of our applications didn't actually go out on egg thresholds because of that trickle-in effect.
Yeah, that caused us a tremendous amount of headache.
So how long did that trickle-in effect last year?
All year.
Yeah, it lasted from July 4th all the way until dang near August.
So what's a normal time frame? Because, you know, we obviously devoted – last year was different.
So it's not uncommon for us to see 3 to 6 weeks of egg laid. But, again, it all depends on the corn and how far spread out it is. That's not, I would say, very unusual, but there's peaks in there, peaks and valleys and – the problem is when you get these low eggs, it is not really worth treating, and they just keep surviving, and that's what we kept running into last year. I think our corn is a little more condensed this year. More, you know, there's some late corn, obviously, but it is, you know, seems to be grouped a little more. I guess the weather permitted the planting, so we'll probably have some bigger peaks, but there will always be some trickling, just depending on where your location is.
The bigger the peak in egg lay, the easier it is to make a decision.
Absolutely. So our insecticides of choices still are, for worms, are going to be Besiege and Prevathon,
which are diamides.
They are diamides.
Figured that, because you started talking about diamides about 20 minutes ago and we never got back around to it.
That's because you keep distracting us with random stuff.
No, this is not random. What this is eliminating the entomological jargon where our listeners can actually gain some knowledge from the words coming out of your mouth.
Like the word, what I said, we're going to get a shot of this. Look, I'm just trying to break the consultants from saying we're going to poison the crop instead of we're going to put an application out. I found a control guide from the 60s, an insect control guide from Mississippi State from the 60s. And I know where they all get it from, because it says when you poison your cotton, poison it with this. And it's just funny how the terminology
has changed. Yeah, but it's funny because a lot of guys that are, you know, in their 20s and early 30s are still poisoning stuff. And they ain't never heard that word from other than the old ants.
I know. They're getting it from the old folks that have been around.
I heard it way back yonder when I first started.
Kind of to summarize this long, how long we be going here?
20 minutes and you still ain't said nothing, but we need to let these bugs come out of the corn and go into the cotton.
And we're expecting to see them when?
When? About 3 to 6 weeks.
No, I think we're going to see them next week.
Well, no, 4 or 3 to 6 weeks, you said.
In 7 to 10 days.
In 7 to 10 days from July to, yeah, I think we're going to start picking up some. But really, so to summarize all this, expect to start seeing some eggs. Be early. Don't be late on some of these egg sprays in your Bolgard 2. And what did you say about Bolgard 3 and eggs?
Do not use the egg threshold.
That's right. Save some money. Let the larvae hatch. Use damage and larval, just like we used to do. So be early rather than late. Expect to see them next week.
Don't freak out when you see a little bit of damage or a few larvae. I mean, we can't afford zero tolerance in this, in any of these crops. And, you know, just that's kind of what my parting message would be.
My parting message, and I should have mentioned this earlier, we've talked about it a lot in the past. When you're looking for these eggs, 10% egg lay in the terminal of the crop has generally correlated to about 20% eggs on the whole plant. So keep that in mind. Our threshold is pretty much 20% of bloom tags, you know, plants with a egg on a bloom tag. But if you're finding them in the terminals, generally 10% equates to about 20% on the whole plant. Did I say that correctly, Whitney?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, I mess that up every time I try to explain it, but
you got it finally.
Finally. You can teach an old dog new tricks. But seriously, for those of you listening, if you ever need to contact any of us, whether it's irrigation specialists, economists, whoever working in ag, Whitney keeps that list pretty much up to date except for Bobby. And you can find all that information on Mississippi-Crops.com.
Under contact information.
And your contact information is?
901-592-8787.
There you go.
Angus, don't want to hear from you. Call Whitney.
Call Whitney.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.